Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 357th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
I'm Mike Gall. I'm a family doctor and a professor at the University of Alberta, and in the luxurious Edmonton studios today with us is Dr. Lynn Blatt. Now, you prefer Dr. Lynn Blatt to Adrian?
I prefer to be known as God.
Okay. Like, there's no blasphemy intended there.
No, not at all.
All right, our heavenly father, mother. What are we going to, we're going to talk about headache prevention today, right?
Absolutely.
And what is better than using a natural product or a vitamin? I can't think of anything.
Nothing at all.
So maybe even if they don't work, it's still better to use them than drugs, which are
We'll discuss that when we actually talk about the placebo group response. So you're trying to be funny, but you actually may be real.
Well, I've tried many times to be funny. I've rarely succeeded.
Anyway, let's jump in there, guys.
Yeah, let's jump in. So a daily dose of riboflavin, does it actually – and what is – which one of the vitamins is that, first of all? Is that vitamin E?
That's vitamin B2.
Okay, good.
Absolutely.
I get so confused by these.
Absolutely.
Okay, so do they prevent migraines, right? That's the big issue here. And this has certainly become a very popular intervention to prevent migraines. And I see a lot of patients on it, both adults and peds. And I think you're going to go over both.
Yep.
Today. So let's jump right in.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people are interested in this. A lot of people are being told to take it. And so that's kind of the reason that we wanted to look at this. I actually had a PharmD student by the name of Evan Sain look into this and do our first draft of everything. So he did a lot of great work. But we really focused on the double-blind randomized controlled trials for this. And we can kind of break it down here into the studies in adults versus the studies in kids. And in adults, we have 3 double-blind RCTs, and it's kind of the population you would expect. It's younger, mainly women, so kind of 20s and 30s, women with migraine. And it's all a mix of migraine with aura versus migraine without. And pretty much all of the studies followed people for 3 months. That was kind of a consistent method across the board. So in our first study, it was about 55 patients who on average had about 4 migraines per month at baseline. And they were randomized to riboflavin 400 milligrams a day or placebo. And in a lot of these studies, they would give a little bit of beta carotene in the placebo just to actually try and mask it, because riboflavin can change the color of your pee, make it a lovely orange color, which is not normal. And
not normal. I'm
not normal. Yeah. Take notes. So they'd often put a little bit of something, and in this case it was a little bit of beta carotene just to try and mask that a bit. Now, all of these studies, it's interesting how they look at their outcomes and how they define a reduction in migraines and how to prevent migraines. So we tended to look at the outcome of a 50% reduction in frequency. That is probably the one that is the least biased outcome. There's a number of other outcomes you can look at. There are days of migraine per month that can be changed. There's severity of migraine. There's length of migraine. But the problem with a lot of those is that they are very subject to bias depending on what kind of acute treatment is used for the migraine. So we didn't tend to look at a lot of those outcomes. When we did, there was often no difference. But in some cases, it was just susceptible to bias, and they didn't often tell us what kind of baseline medications they were on. And as we get into this, we'll talk about how some of the studies didn't have equal baseline characteristics. So there's some question that randomization wasn't always perfect, which makes those other outcomes really, really tricky to look at. So just going back to the study, this study of 55 patients, they did find a reduction in 50%, a 50% reduction in frequency of migraines. So it was 56% of women in the riboflavin arm versus 19% in the placebo arm, which gives you a number needed to treat of 3. Which sounds pretty good. There were some concerns with reading these papers, and this was one that was a little bit tricky. We couldn't really figure out who funded this paper. And they did some interesting things with their statistics. So in some of their baseline characteristics, they present as means, I believe. But then when you actually get to the results, it's presented as medians. So there's just some slight little things that happened throughout this paper that just made it a little more tricky to read through and try to make sense of, and making sure that you understand exactly what's going on when the numbers are not being reported the same throughout the whole paper. And a lot of these papers also don't look at side effects all that much. It would kind of say patients were asked about side effects, none were reported, that kind of thing. But there wasn't, if they even did that, didn't happen very often. So they might say they asked about adverse events, but then didn't report them in the results. So you don't really know if anything happened or not.
And this study was published about 20 years ago. So, you know, we are now seeing better reporting of clinical trials. And we often saw that in these single centers, small trials, that the reporting is very tricky to know what, to deal with, especially some of the older trials.
And that was when you were doing research, James.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I gave up research much earlier than that.
Weren't you that monk that we're combining pea pods? I can't remember.
Oh, my goodness. We're starting there. I'm getting a migraine right now. And I have never had a headache.
No, because I've been the headache. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the second trial, which
sure.
I think is interesting because it, again, does it slightly differently. Instead of the number of migraines, it reports it as the days with migraine.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So this was a larger style. It was more recent. It just came out about 2 years ago. It was 112 patients who on baseline had about 6 days of migraines per month. And they're randomized to a nutritional product, so a proprietary product. And this one contained riboflavin 400 milligrams, magnesium, coenzyme Q10, as well as a whole bunch of other vitamins. So again, this is a proprietary product given that or placebo for, again, about 3 months. And in this case, they found that it did reduce the days with migraine per month from 1.8 to 1.3, but this wasn't statistically different. And when they looked at other outcomes, other measures of frequency, there was no difference in these other outcomes as well. So here we have a newer, larger study with a proprietary product that found no benefit to giving riboflavin. They did report adverse effects. In this case, they combined them in an interesting way. So they combined diarrhea with discolored urine, and which I thought was an interesting combination to put together. And this one had a number needed to harm of 4.
Yeah, this is a first. We have never seen that combined outcome.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
I guess it's one for looking in the toilet afterwards.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it didn't, the combined outcome wasn't mostly diarrhea, discolored urine, or death.
Yeah.
Because usually they combine those things.
Or blepharitis.
Yes.
Irritation of the eyelids.
Awesome.
Interesting, but...
Yeah. Yeah. And so this was kind of one of those studies where the baseline characteristics weren't really well matched. So, for example, in terms of having comorbidities, about 42% in the combination product had some type of medical history, whereas it was almost 58% in the other group. So, again, we're looking at a lot of these baseline differences where you just don't know if it's a problem with randomization concealment or what exactly happened with the randomization process that you're starting to see these differences in groups.
And in that case, because I don't think you mentioned the magnitude of the harm. We talked about the harm, but
number needed to harm of 4.
Yeah.
So 1 in 4 people will have diarrhea or discolored urine.
Or both.
Yeah, and almost not for sure, but it's very likely secondary to the magnesium.
Yeah, that's a good point.
For the diarrhea.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's, you know, you typically see that with magnesium, because I don't think you see that with riboflavin. Most of the studies don't show
that. I don't think so.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure that's the magnesium that was in there that did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. And you wonder if these authors were like, you know what, let's combine these just as a joke.
Yeah.
Keep them guessing.
Yeah.
Okay, and I think there's only one more in adults, right?
Yeah, just one more, and it was a study of 49 patients. And this one was also riboflavin, 400 milligrams, and with magnesium and feverfew. So this was another proprietary product. And they were comparing it to placebo. But in this case, placebo was actually a low dose of riboflavin. It was 25 milligrams of riboflavin. So the author said they picked that to, again, discolor the urine and help mask it. But as we see, that may have affected the results a little bit. We're not sure. So in this case, when they looked at the 50% reduction frequency, it was about 42% in one group versus 44% in placebo, which wasn't different. And the authors did go on to state that they think this might be that riboflavin 25 milligrams may have actually had some effect. We don't really know what the optimal dose of riboflavin is.
These are the moments in the podcast that James has been waiting for.
Oh, are they?
No.
Yeah. Now, okay, James, low dose. Go ahead. Fill the next 20 minutes.
Not in this case.
What?
I'm going to leave you
How
waiting.
Can you resist?
No, I have so much more to talk about in just moments. So you just keep going.
Okay, excellent. So yeah, the question is, did the low dose work, or is it just that riboflavin doesn't work? really where we're at with that one. Mm-hmm. They also found no reduction in the number of migraines per month, no significant difference. Once again, with the study, we have no idea how randomization concealment was done, and they didn't report adverse effects at all, so we don't know how well the study was or how well the drug was tolerated here. So that's about it for adults. When we look at pediatrics now, this is a big area, I think, where a lot of people, as Mike said, are really looking at an alternative and really wanting a non-drug treatment for their kids. So we really had three randomized controlled studies looking at this. And basically, one used about 50 milligrams versus placebo, and the other used 200 milligrams versus placebo, both in about 45 children. They found no difference in days with migraine or in headache intensity. They did find a reduction with the frequency. It was a 50% reduction in the frequency, which was not statistically significant. One of the studies was significantly underpowered to actually find a difference. So basically, we have two good placebo-controlled RCTs that found no benefit. The third study, on the other hand, is quite interesting because it tried to state that it did find a benefit, but the problem is the baseline characteristics, again, were so unmatched that it's really... you can't even really interpret the results. So if we look just at the mean frequency of migraine at baseline, it was 6.4 migraines per month in riboflavin compared to 5 in placebo. So it doesn't matter which baseline characteristic you look at between the two groups, they really don't match. So there's really nothing else we can draw from that study really at all. That's pretty much it for peds. There's been a few systematic reviews that have looked at riboflavin. None of them have completed a meta-analysis. So we really just looked at the randomized controlled trials here, and that was the best we found.
So in this last one, 67% of those in the placebo group got a response, a 50% reduction in their headache frequency versus 44% in the treatment arms.
Yes.
That indicates to me that placebo is considerably more effective.
Fascinating, hey?
Yeah, except that's not statistically significant, right?
Yeah, but still, it's impressive.
It tells you that there's a lot that goes on with the natural history, right, of migraine headaches.
Oh, mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. And the power of these are some of the conditions that are potentially responsive to a placebo intervention. Mm-hmm. And when I say I mean more than the pill itself, but
yes, exactly.
But yeah, they're they are responsive. Like placebos are the actual placebo component. The biggest one of the big areas that it links well to as having effectiveness is pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is certainly one, and it's surprising these results. They are consistently inconsistent, which we see a lot in these kind of studies where we're looking at scales and pain response and all of that. And they're also like there's really only one I think that we saw where we saw a convincing effect out of five studies. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong in that, Adrian, or am I
nope.
Was I heavily sedated during most of the podcast? Because I think it's hard to imagine how we can advocate strongly for this product when it's when the effects are so unreliable.
Absolutely. And so when you look at guidelines on this, it's quite interesting because they admit that the evidence is low quality. But when you compare the risks to the benefits, they say, well, it's so well tolerated that maybe it's worth a try.
Except for diarrhea. That's if you
use the products with the combination, right?
Yeah, for sure.
When you add in magnesium, because I know there are also studies that have looked at just magnesium on its own. And I think there are studies, and again, this is not a meta-analysis of any of these sorts of things, but I think there has at times been studies that have shown magnesium works, just like at times there have been studies showing that riboflavin worked.
Absolutely.
But when you look globally at it, it really isn't that impressive.
There's also coenzyme Q10 and Feverfew, and I mean, you name it, probably it's been studied.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What I found most fascinating about guidelines is in the Canadian guidelines, this is one that gives it a strong recommendation for a trial of it. But then if you read further on in the guideline, they actually state, and I'll read it for you, despite the evidence from these trials, clinical experience with riboflavin for migraine prophylaxis has been generally disappointing.
Right.
So even though they state the evidence is poor, but they say, well, it's well tolerated, but we've used it in practice, it doesn't work, but we're still going to strongly recommend it. So I just I have to kind of wrap my head around that one a little bit, but that's
welcome to the world of guidelines and humans.
Yeah.
But that's so awesome. And to sort of put it into context, and I know you guys have got the sort of a context at the end, but I think sort of a useful way to think about it, and Mike, we've talked about that, we've done headaches and stuff in the past on podcasts, and just to have everyone remember, here's a sort of a simple rule of thumb that you can kind of think about is that, and Adrian's correct in saying that, you know, the typical response is greater than a 50% reduction in headache severity, frequency, or duration, and you usually assess that over 2 to 3 months. And there are a number of drug classes that do work, and you guys have that in your tools for podcasts, the beta blockers and the tricyclic antidepressants. And here's a way you can sort of explain it to patients is if you were to give a placebo, about 25% of people will have a greater than 50% reduction in those, in the headache severity and frequency. And then if you give a medication, instead of being about a 25% response, it goes up to about 45 to 50%. So in other words, you get about a 25% absolute increase in the number of people who get a benefit if you use some of the medications that actually have fairly consistent evidence of benefit, like the beta blockers and the tricyclic antidepressants. Now I will add in, Mike, this also does work with low and very low doses.
There it is.
See? Well, you know, I had to put it in the right context, Mike.
Okay, well, thank you, James, for adding that. For those of you playing along at home, that was 18 minutes and 50 seconds. Exactly. So check your tickets. You might have won.
but it's important, though. So given those sort of numbers, if you give a person something like low-dose beta blocker, low-dose amitriptyline, and they respond, it still means there's a 50-50 chance it wasn't that medication.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So in clinical practice, patients who want to try and stop medicines later, I say to them, there's a chance that this isn't, particularly after a while, that this isn't working anymore and you just don't have these headaches. Do you want to come off, et cetera? And you'd be surprised a number of them will get rebound headaches. I've had that happen in practice. So they were – and there, now we're increasing the chance that it was actually the drug.
Totally, yeah.
We're still not 100%.
No. But I think that's what we should all be doing as clinicians. That's our – sort of our – that's kind of the fun part, to let the – to give the patient the power and the control to do it. And one of the ways – we've talked about this many, many times is, you know, I wouldn't imagine you would suggest that you just go ahead and stop them, but you know, you just cut the dose in half and then, you know, see what happens over a month or two. And then if you cut the dose again in half and so on. And that's sort of this is one of the best examples that I've seen of best conditions where it's really all about trial and error, probably more error than trial sometimes, and allowing the person to figure it out for themselves, to say, I don't know if it's going to work for you, but try to figure out the lowest dose that works. And there are many, many medications that have been looked at that have shown efficacy above placebo. You know, we've talked about the beta blockers and the tricyclic antidepressants, but there's other, you know, NSAIDs have been shown to work. Valproic acid, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, gabapentin, ACE inhibitors have been shown.
ACEs, and so has some calcium channel blockers. Yeah. And same with topiramate and those, they've been tried, although I don't think none of them are the kings are the beta blockers and the TCAs right now. And the TCAs have the slight advantage in that they're effective also for tension type headaches, where the beta blockers aren't. But beta blockers are probably a little bit more reliable, their effect in migraines than TCAs. So, you know, choose your poison, but they are. But we do have some really good options. This is kind of like the idea of, you know, does cranberry juice prevent urinary tract infections? Mm-hmm. And we've covered that before. If it does, it does it so minimally, and you can choose to take a very low dose of an antibiotic for 6 months, and it has a much larger effect on the reduction in risk of UTIs. And of course, you wouldn't use that in a than very many people. Mm-hmm. I think I've used it a couple times in my career, but for some patients, it does make a huge difference for them when they're having them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, probably one of the reasons that there is, you know, people who recommend things like riboflavin and things, you know, if as long as you don't put the magnesium, you probably don't get any side effects. You are going to get 1 in 4 responding.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, yep. Because of the, and that's, and so again, that's why, you know, that's how myths get started, in that because the natural history is about 1 in 4 people will get better just because they come in to see you. It's the whole regression to the mean and all that sort of process. And that's why it's so important to understand what's the baseline response in all of these studies. And it's typically around 25%, which is what we see for most things when it comes to do with pain. And Mike, as you pointed out, that's not because of the placebo effect. It's just, it might maybe a little bit of it, but it's primarily due to the natural history of the condition. So knowing all of those concepts really helps you, I think, people be really solid clinicians, because it helps you have that conversation and it gives you that thought process of how to deal with all of these sorts of medications. And I think migraine prophylaxis is just a wonderful example of the skills you need to do to maneuver through that whole process.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And getting patients ready for the idea of taking a pill every day for something that happens 4 times a month.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, that's very tricky, right? Yeah. And those are all balanced on so many issues, on the severity of the migraine, all sorts of things.
Yeah, but I mean, I there's very few people, if they have more than 3 moderate to severe headaches a month, where they will go, where they're going to go, no, I don't want to try anything. I mean,
yeah. Oh, you, yeah. Well, in my experience, it's different, but trying to get them to accept that there's a preventative solution. People aren't as keen on taking a pill.
Oh no,
I totally
get that. But they are desperately looking for treatments.
Well, if they get something that's, yeah, it's hard to say. There, patients are. I don't know if you've known this, James, or you haven't heard, but they're not clones.
No.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
They were. It's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big surprise.
Yeah. Well, I think I learned when I come to
work. Right, we've learned. Yeah, orange pee, not normal.
Not normal.
Yeah. And people vary.
Wow.
People vary.
Mind blown.
Yeah.
I think one of the things is, I totally appreciate that, because, you know, especially when you start saying that, you know, that something like propranolol, that's a drug that, you know, it's a heart drug, or amitriptyline, that's an antidepressant. And I think that's the conversation you almost have to have first, and I think at least, you know, in my experience, and you guys have more experience than I do with this, but if you go with, you know, we're going to use a very, very low dose, and let's just see, and that sort of encouragement, because these drugs do have an effect in these people who suffer a lot. And so, and again, we're not going to, you know, people who've listened to the podcast over the last number of years saying we don't push medications, but we also want them to not come away with, you know, oh, I don't want to be on an antidepressant. Well, it's only an antidepressant because that's what we use it for, if you know what I mean.
That's what we first used it for. That's what it got to market on. It's actually, it's probably main use for amitriptyline now is pain. Yeah. I would say that the vast majority of people on it are for pain.
Yeah, but there you go. Yeah, so no, anyway, that's really interesting. Because I knew there was a, back when we did this earlier, there was a study showing that riboflavin worked, but more recent ones have shown really not much at all.
Yeah, not very reassuring, but you know, still helpful. So, Adrian, can you sum us up in just 2 words? No, maybe you can go a little longer.
Oh, actually, it
could be
two. It
could be 2 letters. Riboflavin. No.
Okay.
Well, cool. I'd probably use slightly more words because I'm wordy, but I'd say that, you know, the studies really have been inconsistent, high placebo response rates. Most of the RCTs have found no reduction in migraine frequency. It was really that one older one that did. And in that one, it said that for every 3 adults treated with riboflavin, 1 patient would have a 50% reduction in migraine frequency compared to placebo. We don't know a lot about adverse effects. It's probably really well tolerated. Discolored urine is the biggest thing, and maybe diarrhea, depending what else is in the product.
All right. That's about it. Another miracle podcast.
Yeah.
I think
Well, it's a miracle because apparently at the beginning we were told that Adrian is God.
Yes, there we go.
And we were told Evan was involved, and it wasn't really clear what Evan's role was, but he was here as a community service agreement.
Yes.
No, he's a PharmD student, and we were lucky enough to get him. So yeah, that's no, great.
He did good. Some great work with us.
Okay, great job, guys. So the Alberta course is people are signing up. They're lining up outside to attend the course.
Yeah, that's right. Right, it's yeah. They're gathering in crowds. I can't tell whether they're demonstrating Trump or us, but yeah. so they're know that we're about 50% sold. So nice. Encourage people interested. It's October 2021 to sign up. It could be a lot of. It will be a lot of fun, and you might learn something.
And we would love it if
it will come in on the quality of what you'll learn.
Yeah. We would love it if you guys would become premium members because. You're missing a lot if you're not a premium podcast subscriber. Mike.
Yeah,
Mike,
that's right. They're R-rated. Yeah, they're R-rated.
When we're trying to sell this thing, and when I say that and you laugh, it's not a good sales technique.
No, you're right. You're right. So, that was Adrian. But
oh,
was
thanks. Yeah.
So we make sure you check out our website, therapeuticseducation.org, and check out all the tools for practice. Literally, you can just type tools for practice and it'll pop up on you in your browser. The Vancouver course is coming up May 4th and 5th of 2018. So just put that away in the recesses of your mind. And I think that's it. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.
Bye.